listening to the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. In this final segment of the three-part series recorded at the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, Charles DeComfy continues the discussion on training the modern dressage horse by considering stride length versus frame and overstepping.
I always agonized about this when I was judging, because we had judges' forums, and then, of course, there was a majority of scores. And then if you had something very deviant from it, away from it, you were asked why. And that's how it should be. So I like that very much. But I remember one thing, extend a walk on the diagonal. And this horse had by then not a correct walk. He never overstrode, but he never even stepped into the footprint of the forehand with his hind legs. He was understriding. So false collection. He wasn't collected. In fact, the frame was lengthened. In this case, almost too much. It more looked like a free walk than an extended walk, a horse completely allowed to stretch. It's not a bad idea, but anyway, that's all there was. And understriding, absolutely short behind, very stiff. So everybody, you know, beautiful length. You have to lengthen the frame. Oh, 6 and 7, I don't remember. So I was 4. And 4 is becoming a big no-no. You give a 4, you get grilled. You have the medieval torture set on you. So why 4? And then, actually, the argument was, well, but didn't you see the longer frame? I said, extended walk is not defined by a longer frame. It's a reference to how much territory he passes per stride. He understrode. Oh, but it was so nice. At least you should have been a 5, if not a 6. So regular, yes, regularly understriding. So there was this big argument, and my fear is that if we redefine every movement, if in the extended walk you don't really have to extend anymore, then everything is 9 or whatever. I always say sarcastically that those of us who don't know where we are going, we always arrive. Because you just do it wrong and I am great, you know? No. Extended walk, overstride, yeah, but hopefully a foot. I mean, not overstride one hoof print, but the whole foot. Why not? So no, now we redefine it. Oh, he had such a nice top line and a good stride. No, that's not extended walk. So anyway, these arguments in judges' forums are very useful, because some people, you know, actually want to hear that or want to have an opinion and say, how should I judge next time I see this? And I think today so much is ignored about the high croup, the shortening and choppiness of stride. And what we forget too is, you know, oh, I watched the impulsion and the articulation of the joints in the hindquarters, which is correct. That's where you are supposed to watch it and notice it. But we forget that the horse's hind legs are also his brakes. So if a horse trots and you want from on the forehand to horizontal trot to raise the forehand up to this free, you know, the withers up and the hind leg fully supporting and overstriding to make this transmission of from the forehand to the haunches, the horse has to use a hind leg a lot as brakes. He slows the forehand. If the forehand is the same speed as the hind end, it never rises. Do you understand that somehow? Because with aeroplanes taking off, we don't see that. We don't think that the wheels of the aeroplane is slowing the plane to take off. But in riding, when you lighten a horse's forehand, half halt, in other words, use his legs to slow him, to slow the kinetic bulk of his heavy chest and shoulders, not to pull him forward. You slow the front and raise it, and then put the hind leg under it. I hope you understand that, because the horse is a horizontal pipe, and it's very hard to raise a long, heavy lead pipe with holding just the end of it, and you try to raise it up like a fishing pole, and it's very hard. It breaks your wrist because you are in a long pole, is a heavy item. And the horse is that long pole that you have to raise like a fishing pole in front of you by the hind leg of the horse breaking on the forehand. So if you chase a horse into full speed, it's a nightmare. It's the opposite. You never break the front. He's rolling with kinetic energy, unexercised.
Charles also offered his views on the concept of an American dressage academy.
Well, what I would like to see is an expert authority put in place that defines these things and talks about them and holds the forums and the meetings. There are many substitute actions in that, like in Florida, the dressage meeting coming up in February and so on. These are like experiencing 2 days at the National Academy, but where are the other 350 days? So for 2 days you wet your feet and then you are sent home, and to have a body of experts who guide the understanding of the science of riding. A National Academy also, so it's a quality check. Today we have quality inspectors at Clorox or someplace. Well, this would be quality inspectors, but also teaching academy on a university level. Also important would be from an academy that people could go and consult. And the most important is that riding should address the entire human being, which is really mind, spirit, and body. The body, the pleasure of riding, the sport of riding, and we address the body, unfortunately, quite wrongly, because we don't teach riders always how to do it. But the body of the three elements is the least important, and an academy has a chance to address the science of riding, the academic, intellectual aspect of riding, to know the subject, like extended walk has to overstride the footprint of the forehand. So there are academic things and health things and only an academy. How do you teach that in a two-day clinic in Montana? And then riders take two-day clinics for 28 years, and they don't have a clue how to adjust the noseband. In an academy, this is swept out of the way in the first 2 weeks of instruction. In other words, that there is no systematic, standardized instruction where people understand right from wrong, wrong from right, the science of riding, and so on. In the 70s, I had many written proposals. I submitted it to colleges, universities who had equestrian programs, and they all nixed it, and then I proposed it to private friends who were wealthy people, and they all said it's impossible because financially it's a total loser. It's like, you know, lighting $100 bills. You can't finance it. This is terrible. And my last proposal was, I thought was very good, but all businessmen rejected. I have no business mind at all. I said, why don't we do a unique thing like the best climate in the world, Big Sur, California, up in the mountains, no motors, engines, and gasoline. You park your car at the bottom on Highway 1. you are met by a carriage and horses, and you are trotted up to the riding academy where you live in silence and concentration, and you have tennis court, swimming pool, and it's a resort. And you offer it for summer camp for rotten teenagers that parents cannot handle. The parents would pay, and we would teach these monsters horseback riding because the teachers, this would, an academy is a place to teach, to train teachers and judges. So these teachers would have guinea pigs, paying guinea pigs. These teenagers would pay to stay in the resort. And these would be the ones we teach. And I could supervise, well, I or another teacher, the young teachers as to their skills. Teach them methodology, which I do in England and in Sweden. I teach this kind of thing, and it works wonderfully. So anyway, it was always rejected on financial basis. Nobody said it's a stupid idea. Nobody said the country is too big for it. They all said it is a recipe for bankruptcy. And I, as I said, the resort idea I thought should have made money or possible, and they said, no, it's wrong.
Charles was asked by a member of the USDF instructor certification faculty how to inspire the spirit and the mind of the rider as well as the body.
It is a process that never ends. It's very similar to life itself, how to live life well. But it does start with discussions about what is the meaning of the horse and nobles, the man's character. And there are some very serious thoughts in that direction, and that should be known to all participants. And the only way, because books have not been written about this, here and there in a chapter I mention it sometimes, but riders should become aware that this is very much an art for the spirit or for the character, and it is to develop riding, when correctly practiced, is to develop the virtues that make adult responsible humans out of egocentric, narcissistic children. You know that in each language in Europe, a nobleman, an aristocrat, is the same word as a rider. Chevalier, cavaliere, Ritter in German, etc. It means you are an aristocrat, yeah, but incidentally, it's the term for a rider. So once you are a rider, you are elevated to the aristocracy of humanity because it develops the emotional integrity and the virtues of the rider. And this should be explained, and there is no shortcut about that. And it was fostered in us by example and lecturing and scolding for 4 years. Hence, I never punished or beat a horse. It didn't exist. You punished a horse. That's a character problem, you know. Punishing horses is dirty. And we had zero tolerance. You were noticed once to do that. You stood up your whip and did whoosh, whoosh. You were forever out, but you really literally could not enter through the gate of the school, the academy. You were literally a pariah. You were forever banished. Ethics. Ethics only. If you don't have the character to deal with it without this, you don't belong here. Get out. So yes, it is the hardest. Character development is what used to be called upbringing, and now parents abdicated. They don't do upbringing. They pasture the children, so they grow up like pasture. And academies, riding academies, must address inner life of the rider.
A question on tempo, running, and collection was also addressed.
every horse, because of his conformation and structure and mental state, nature, every horse has a signature rhythm in motion. It's very much like our fingerprints. No one else has it. So when you take a young horse or any horse, a third level horse, and you ride it, you discover, if you have feeling, you understand his signature rhythm. And you have to aid him in that rhythm, in the regularity of his footfall, to successfully engage him. Otherwise, you produce speed and not engagement. So the tempo of the horse is how much distance he covers within a set period of time. And you can, the better trained your horse is, the more choice you have to adjust your tempo. A very green horse has one tempo, fast. And so, fast and stiff. So the tempo is already one adjustable part of your wisdom made manifest. But it is always based on the signature, natural rhythm the horse brings to you and that you have to understand before you can adjust the tempo.
The practices of modern management styles, turning out and hacking out, was also considered.
In correct training that we pursued in academies, the heart of it was diversification. We were to ride hundreds of different horses and in hundreds of different ways, and be outside and ride cross-country in groups or in pairs or in many different ways with different assignments was essential to the horse's clarity of mind.
You'll find parts 1 and 2 of this 3-part series under podcasts in the iTunes store. Charles de Comfy is a 2013 inductee to the USDF Roma Hall of Fame. Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning centre and resource for dressage and equine education, to watch videos from this convention and other USDF events at usdf.org. The 2014 Adequan USDF Annual Convention, presented by SmartPak, will be held in Cambridge, Massachusetts, from Wednesday, December 3rd through Saturday, December 6th. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.